Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
The people who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Brett Brown can walk off the floor tonight knowing he actually did get a win. And now everybody looking around at each other with their hand on the string on the confetti saying, are we good? Did we really win this one? They did. Full marks to the Sixers. Yeah. It wasn't their best game this year, but it was more than enough to survive, and they have extended the series back to Boston on Wednesday for Game 5. Final score, Philadelphia 103, Boston 92. Sixers get the win, but the Celtics get the split, and they can close it out Wednesday night in Boston.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program, Felger and Mazzarotti. We're going to start with this. We're going to start with the Celtics' loss last night in Game 4 in Philadelphia. You may join us at 617-779-0985. Jim Murray in our update studio, Maz in the Maz chair. What did you think of last night, Maz?
I mean, to me, predictable game. Like, I expected Philly to come out and try to avoid the sweep, which is exactly what they did. And so, you know, am I worried? Nope. If they lose Game 5, I'll be worried. I'll start to worry. How about that? But I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to come back here. They're going to take care of business. Philly's going to implode. And so, to me, it was sort of, you know, I sort of felt that one was coming last night. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it felt like predetermined to me in a lot of ways. The officiating was bad, but I know we can't really bitch about officiating on the show, but it wasn't the main reason the Celtics lost. Their shooting in the fourth quarter specifically was terrible. I thought Terry Rozier was awful, especially defensively. The switch to T.J. McConnell obviously paid off the 76ers, and Rozier couldn't keep up with him all night. So that's a small concern. If they end up losing tomorrow, and he'll be in the starting five, I can't imagine that Brett Brown's that stupid to keep him out of it again. But if McConnell's in and gives Rozier trouble and they lose, I'll be a wee bit worried.
So the McConnell thing, my takeaway is, and which I just totally skipped right over a second ago, it makes me convinced that Brett Brown's even dumber than I thought, which is
quite an accomplishment.
Weren't we screaming for this after Game 1? Why did it take him till Game 4 to make this switch? Donkey. Like, this was basic. All you had to do was watch Game 1 and say, they dropped off at Simmons. They're covering the shooters. They got to put someone on the floor to take the ball out of Simmons' hands. It's apparent in Game 1. Game 1, that was apparent. It took him until Game 4 to do it. The knucklehead.
Why do you think he's so reluctant?
Because of Simmons.
Absolutely.
Because Simmons is a mental case.
And he's still playing them together.
Yeah.
He still plays them together.
So I'll tell you what. I don't even mind that. And I'll tell you why. Because I think if you use Simmons off the ball and there's a guard on him, he can post up and score around the basket. I'm okay with that. I don't mind that part of it. But he had to put someone else out there that could handle the ball and that the Celtics then had to defend. Because if Simmons is handling the ball in the perimeter, you don't have to guard him. I mean, it was apparent from Game 1 that that's how they were going to play it. And it took this jackass till Game 4 to do it. You know what I mean. It's astonishing to me that it took four games when the rest of the world could see it after Game 1.
But there was just the game sucked. I mean, Jaylen Brown gets in foul trouble. He seemed disengaged. You have Aaron Baines taking, what was it, six threes? And I know he's actually been hitting them in this series, but please, like, he should never be shooting six threes in a game.
Yeah, that's the coaching, Murray. Stevens told him to take those.
They got killed on the rebounding, especially offensively. It just, the game sucked.
Okay, you're allowed to talk about the officiating. It's the NBA. Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, it was such a bag job. I mean, that sequence where it was, what, the five-point swing there in the third quarter where you got a couple of technical fouls on Brown and Stevens, like, I mean, come on. Like, that's, I was listening to it at that point, and I didn't even need to see it to know that they were getting jobbed. When I heard who the officials were for that game, I knew they were going to get jobbed. And Jimmy sent us the stat in the email chain. The Celtics have never won a playoff game under,
Larry Brothers.
Brothers
or
and
Tony Brothers.
Tony Brothers and the other one.
Scott Foster.
Scott Foster, thank you. Under Scott Foster. So knowing that.
Hold on. They've never won a Scott Foster playoff game?
That's what you sent, Jimmy, right?
No, it was Tony Brothers.
They've lost eight straight now Tony Brothers officiated playoff games.
That's right. They've lost eight straight with Tony Brothers out there.
Oh, yeah, no. He's like the hitman. They bring him in, and it's like, you know, you're going to get one right between the ears on that night.
But between those two guys, and they put them together, I mean, they're the shadiest officials that are left in the NBA right now, Brothers and Foster. So I wasn't all that shocked by it, but, man, it really seemed like it was not on the level.
Like, I mean, I used to lose my mind over this because I find it so incredulous. Now it's just I accept it. But it is. I mean, really, that league. When I ask you this, was that game fixed last night?
I mean, to me, it felt predetermined.
Yeah, it kind of was. It was kind of fixed. And, like, everyone sort of knows it, and everyone sort of accepts it. Isn't that wild? Like, and it's that is such a part of the NBA culture that it's...
You don't even bat an eye anymore.
It sucks to lose it, but it's sort of like, yeah, the league sort of fixed that one. Well, oh well. We'll get him back here in game five. It's like, yeah, basically, you're 0-7 playing in front of this one specific ref. The NBA is looking at sweeps in both Eastern Conference series, where they're going to have a week without basketball on the Eastern Conference side, and the Western Conference series are 3-1. So you're looking at, you know, like a stretch of 5, 6, 7 days without any basketball, which is a big hit for them.
Sure it is.
So you have a series where you're 3-0, the road team is going for the sweep, and they assign a ref in which you have lost 7, now 8, consecutive playoff games in front of.
See, to me, the pipe...
And the other guy, who we've given you this, and we've given you the Scott Foster stuff for years and years and years, going way back here on Felger-Maz. But Scott Foster was basically in cahoots with Tim Donaghy during the gambling scandal, and the NBA just let Scott Foster remain. And this is my opinion. It just feels like this to me. Because they wanted to blame the whole thing on a rogue ref and not have a conspiracy on their hands. If there was more than one ref, then you have a full reffing conspiracy and a full situation. If it's just a rogue ref, then it's one guy and, you know, you can sweep the whole thing under the rug. So Scott Foster got to stay. But when you look at the evidence against Scott Foster as it relates to Tim Donaghy, it's impossible to draw any other conclusion that he and Donaghy were doing it together. So you have a 3-0 series lead. The road team is going for the sweep. You've got series across the league ending in 3 or 4 games. And here comes a ref that has decided against you 7, now 8 straight games. And a guy that was, by the looks of it, gambling on games. Was the game fixed? Yeah, it was. It's like, yep, it was. And you know what? You sort of expected it, right?
See,
I'll just finish by saying, I'm surprised it took them so long. I thought that was coming in game 3. Where was Brothers in game 3? That's when you really, that's the game. And then you give the home team momentum, and you may not even need to fix game 4.
Yeah, well, the league underestimated the stupidity of Brett Brown. That's the problem. That's what happened in game 3.
But, like, what a league. Like there's no other comp for that in any other sport where you have those situations. And it's just, it's like, so, and then it all played out. I mean, in the second quarter, was it 12 calls against you, 1 against them?
Something like that.
You went, this is Gary Washburn in the Globe. The Celtics, they didn't attempt a free throw from the 11-minute mark of the second period to the 28-second mark of the third period, a stretch of 22 minutes. The 76ers in that same span attempted 16. So, like...
It was 12-1 in the second quarter.
So, again, you just say, and I shouldn't be taking this lightly, but it's reached a point where I do. Was that game fixed last night? Yeah, it probably was.
We like to use the word engineered, I believe, is the word we've used in the past on this show.
Managed?
Yeah, engineered.
The game was managed.
So the part that I find most amazing about the whole thing is that those of us on the outside have long felt this way. It looked to me like the Celtics knew it last night. Like, and again, because the players know. They know in that league.
Oh,
and the coaches.
Brown looked checked out. When he really started getting foul trouble early, like Jaylen Brown to me seemed checked out. And after he got the technical, he was done.
As soon as you see the ref assignments.
They know.
And you see Larry Brothers.
They know. The players know. And the coaches know. And the executives know. They all know. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. They
no
all
question.
Know. They look at it and go, oh, we're pork tonight. We, you know. So the game starts and it goes a certain way. And then they're like, you know, whatever. Let's just play this puppy out and get home.
We'll see on game 5.
I'm telling you, they do. They do. They know. I'm telling you. I don't know that none of them would ever admit it publicly, but they do. They know. They believe that the league looks at it and goes, oh, they're screwing us tonight. Look who's here. Brothers just walked in the door. Brothers is a mother, as far as I'm concerned. We are getting screwed. We are getting porked tonight. Let's go home and win game 5.
I mean, I'll read you the Scott Foster stuff. When you go back into the details of it, it makes your head spin that he's even in the league. Like, how could this guy still be in the league?
For situations like last night, Mike.
And still be assigned playoff games.
No, he says Jimmy's right. He's got a purpose.
He's the fixer.
Yeah, he's like Clemenza.
Because I don't believe, I think.
I mean, it's to me, it's almost comical at this point. I'm sorry,
I think
Jimmy.
Donaghy was stupid enough for telling people that. I don't believe Scott Foster actually admitted to fixing and gambling on games.
Oh, no. Scott Foster admitted to Jack, and he was cleared by the FBI. which I don't know what that means nowadays. I told you not to listen to those people. I don't know. What does that mean that he was cleared by the FBI?
He's a loser.
You can't trust them. I told you. So, but when you read the I just love reading the Donaghy Foster email texts and phone records. It's mind blowing that this guy is still in league and has been for the last 10 years. I mean, it's like, nope, nothing to see here. Rogreff. He went, okay, yeah, Rogreff. That's it. It was only one guy. And then you see the phone records between Donaghy and Foster. So, like, I don't know. It makes me laugh at this stage. It's just so accepted. It's so part of the game that when it happens, unless you bet it, like, you just go sort of got to shrug your shoulders and say, yeah, they got us. They needed an extra game. They can't have a gap. The Warriors are going to close in 5. The Rockets are going to close in 5. The Cavs have closed in 4. We can't have every series go 4-5. Then we're going to be dark for 5 or 6 days in between the second round of the conference finals, and we just can't have that.
Would you say unless anybody bet it, they knew it was coming? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Was there anybody recording Joe Murray last night, to the best of our knowledge? Was any of that going on? He seems to bet all kinds of crazy stuff.
All right, so we can weigh in on that. We can weigh in on the game, the series. We're going to start with Celtics and your calls at 617-779-0985.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub. Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Terry Rozier on the left side. Blitz by Ilyasova, pressure down here, half court, keeps Redick at bay, and they're calling another foul against the Celtics. Embiid slaps the ball away from Rozier, and now they're going at it. Joel Embiid grabbed the ball from Rozier, he grabbed it back, and Joel Embiid kept going at Rozier.
Joel Embiid laughing, but it was Terry Rozier who knocked his hand away. I'm not sure if Terry Rozier did not throw some kind of forearm or some kind of punch there.
Terry Rozier and Joel Embiid. Double technical, kind of what we expected. Redick turns the corner, finds Embiid, gets to the basket, two-hand slam. They finally pick the Celtics defense apart. That'll do it for the first half, in which the Celtics shoot 37%, commit 9 turnovers, three-point play for Ilyasova, and a fifth foul on Jaylen Brown. 69-62, and a technical foul.
Jaylen Brown.
It's on Jaylen Brown. He didn't think the NBA was going to have 3 nights without games. Right. Another technical. Brad Stevens. O'Connell out near half court. Spins away from Rozier. Attacks the paint. Puts it off the window and in. I mean, it has been a rout. O'Connell against Rozier.
Yeah.
A rout. Final score. Philadelphia 103. Boston 92. Sixers get the win. But the Celtics get the split. And they can close it out Wednesday night.
They beat us. I think that we just got to get back to we'll watch the film, we'll try to improve where we can improve, and we just have to play better.
They got called for offensive foul, and I was trying to get the ball to keep the game flowing because I felt like we had an advantage. I was trying to get the ball, and he kind of kept the ball away from me and tried to punch me twice, but too bad he's so short that he couldn't get to my face. I didn't understand why it was a double technical because I was just trying to get the ball and he was the one trying to swing.
Two teams, two guys. That's what it's about, man. Both fighting for their team.
Okay, Grandy said it there. I think the league's going to have 3 days without basketball. It feels like it could be more. I don't know. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but those two Western conferences end in 5 and the two Eastern Conference series ended in 4. And remember, folks, the NBA salary caps went down this year. They were lower than expected. Why? Because last year they lost a ton of playoff revenue because they had too many short series. So what? Now you're in the exact same boat? I mean, it's in everyone's interest for there to be more games, right? As opposed to have to pay back the networks and lower the caps?
Sure.
So
I'm telling you, the Celtics knew it was coming last night.
No question.
They knew it.
It is. In basketball, it's to the point where it's part of the game. I mean, it is. It's part of the game. Your thoughts on that and anything else from last night? Here's Mark in Brookline. Lead us off, Mark.
Hello, fellas. I was Brett Brown's teammate and road roommate in college. And when you mentioned the other day that he was studying, they were studying the timeout situation with his coaching staff, I thought to myself, that could possibly be the most studying that he's ever done. He came to me, I remember, just before graduation. He said, I'm going to write a book one day, entitled How to Go to College for 4 Years and Not Learn Anything. He's always sort of a funny guy about that. And I want them to win. I'm a Celtics fan, but I'm rooting for Brett. But he really messed up by not coming out after blowing game two. And instead of being arrogant, he should have said, you know what, this is on me. I made some rookie mistakes, and it's not going to happen again.
Obviously. Absolutely. It was a warning sign. Big warning sign. When a guy and a team screws up and the coach comes out and says, I wouldn't do anything different. Well, you just blew a 22-point lead, pal. You wouldn't do anything different? What are you, nuts?
Oh, yeah.
It's just a thing to say, and it means you don't get it. It means you have no self-awareness, and it's really hard to improve when you wouldn't change anything. Like, how do you ever improve as a person if you won't change anything? Especially when you screw up. Ay vey. Like, right then and there, it's like, this guy doesn't get it.
Well, especially when you have a young team on top of it. Like, you should be telling them that, you know, we make mistakes, we move on, we learn from them. That's the thing. That team's got a huge leadership problem. Boy, did they have a huge leadership problem.
Well, no question, because Simmons is a puddle at the end of these games. So he's got to bring in McConnell, but he's afraid to bench Simmons because he doesn't want to get in his head. It's like... Right, they rudderless.
Because their two best and most influential players are really young. You know, even Embiid. Like, I look at Embiid sometimes and I say, if Embiid had Al Horford next to him, he'd be so much better off for it. He really would. And so there's a difference there in how the two teams have approached it. Like, to me, there's a hole there in how Philly's model. Maybe they'll overcome it in the long run. Who knows? But there's a leadership problem on that team.
Kevin on the landline. Hi, Kev.
Yeah, so I think by now, guys, we all know that the NBA rigs games when they need to do it. To me, that's not the egregious part. To me, it's how obvious they make it. I mean, you look at some of the calls last night, the disparity in fouls in the second quarter. To me, the call on Marcus Smart when Ben Simmons basically lands on him, I mean, are you kidding me? How does Marcus Smart get called for a foul there? I mean, it's just a joke.
So there were a couple where I thought you guys were in the restricted area, and they called blocking fouls on you because you were underneath the basket. Was that one of them? I can't remember.
So I think if I'm thinking about the right one, I thought Smart pulled him down on top of him.
Oh, no, and I know which one you're talking about, too, now. That wasn't a chart. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I thought Smart pulled him down. That's what I thought. Like, to me, that was like classic NBA flopping on both sides.
To me, we can go back and forth on the specifics. Like, I think, you know, you heard it there in the montage, too, that the offensive foul on Terry Rozier, where he got his hand up on either McConnell or Redick, I thought that was the right call.
Yeah, hit him in the face. It was Redick, I think.
Like, he was totally, like, arm-barring him, you know, fending him off. And, you know, the thing about that sport is you could really call whatever you want on any play.
Possession.
I mean, you really could. So it's really more about the assignments. You know, who are we getting? Yeah, this is a game, and one team needs it to extend the series, and here comes Tony Brothers, who we've lost 7 straight games in front of. Like, it doesn't take a rocket. Like, I guess what's notable is how shameless the league is about it.
Yeah, no, it is. It's like the doorbell rings, and you open it up, and there's the exorcist.
They don't even try and hide it.
No, it's unbelievable.
And Scott Foster. It's, like, unbelievable.
Yeah, they send in the guys in the trench coats.
Billy and Waltham. Go ahead, Billy.
How's it going, guys? So I never cry refs. I hate it. It drives me insane. It gets under my skin. When it happened to the Bruins, like, this past week, I was like, oh, this is just such a bad look for us, like, crying about the refs right now.
I'll tell you what,
but
though. I mean,
watching,
yeah,
watching,
I'm sorry to cut you off. I mean, we're not crying. It's just sort of, acknowledging how amazing it is in that league. That is, it's just that prevalent and that accepted that, you got it last night. Like, you knew it was coming. You could feel it was coming. It happens all the time. It's part of the game. Like, that to me is just, it's not crying. It's just sort of mentioning it, Billy. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. That's what I was saying. I feel like if it's that egregious and that over, it's like, come on. That's blatant. Like, I hate doing it. I hate it myself. But watching that, it was so obvious. It was stupid. But all that being said, I still think the Celtics could have won that game in the end. They were down by 10 points in the fourth, and it felt like if they hit a few threes, maybe stopped a few plays, I don't know, it felt like they could have came around and won it at the end of the game.
Yeah, they were still in it. Yeah, credit to them. I mean, I do think Philly was better. I felt they moved the ball so much better in this game, it wasn't even funny. Or, you know, maybe the Celtics laid off on D, but there were open cutters and open lanes, and I just thought, I finally saw Philly with an offense for the first time the entire series.
Mike, it's because McConnell was on the floor. I'm telling you, that's what it is. With Simmons, it's predictable because he can only do two things.
And everyone lays off.
Right. He either drives to the basket or he passes. Like, it's one of, that's all he can do. So once you introduce, to me, that was it. I felt they needed to do it after game one as soon as I saw it. In fact, I remember when we talked to B-Rod that day, the first thing I asked him is, who's the backup point guard in Philly? Why isn't he playing more? Why? They got to get him out there. They got to get someone else who can handle the ball.
Think if Markel Fultz could play.
It's scary. Yeah, scary. I mean, then you'd look at it and say, there you go.
Three, instead of Skippy Magoo here off the bench.
Three number one picks basically in the draft. There you go. And
but, I mean, talk about needing, you know, filling a need.
Yes. Yeah. And so they're going to need him. I mean, they're going to need him if this thing's going to go the way they want it to go. Or Simmons is going to just have to get to be a better shooter.
Zach in Worcester, hi.
Hey, guys. Just my opinion on it. You know, I think this game predetermined. You look, not only does the NBA not want the series to end fast, but Vegas had to have got killed the game before. Celtics go in, cruise through the first two games, and they're severe, you know, ridiculous underdogs. Heading into Philly, I'm sure they got killed.
Vegas, absolutely, because they had Philly as a heavy favorite, and they've favored Philly in every game, including Game 5. Philly's a 1.5-point favorite tomorrow night.
Yeah, see, that's ridiculous.
Does that raise your sniffer at all?
Sure.
How could Philly be a 1.5-point favorite on the road after you've clearly established yourself as the better team?
And the Celtics haven't lost at home the whole postseason.
How does that happen, Stu?
Because the NBA would like a Game 7 between Boston and Philadelphia on Mother's Day.
You're calling for a Game 7, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you're saying last night was just the beginning?
Yep.
I mean, look.
You're getting porked Wednesday night in Boston. You're getting porked in Philadelphia. And it'll be Game 7, and the NBA doesn't care whether it's Philadelphia or Boston taking on LeBron James.
I mean, without Kyrie, that's probably true. Without Kyrie, that's probably true. I always like to operate under the idea that they will extend series. They won't.
Oh, and I'll tell you what.
And more so, isn't it better for Philadelphia and the process to get into the Eastern Conference Finals against LeBron?
But I don't know why this just entered my head. I mean, obviously it's better for the league, but happened in Philly. Oh, Philly's so dirty. This is where Donaghy was from, and all these guys were from. It's like where it all started. It's like all Philly guys. Weren't they all mobbed up with the Philly guys?
Could be. I don't know.
I have to go
remember.
Back and look at it. I think Donaghy was a Philly guy. Foster might be like their buds. And they were all, again, all their cretins that they, you know, associate with, I think were Philly guys.
I mean, if the Celtics lose the next one, look out. Look out, because they're not going to win Game 6 in
NBA,
Philly.
It's such a,
and then Game 7, anything can happen.
Exactly.
Fascinating part of the NBA. It's just so there. It's
dirty.
So dirty.
I mean, it's never happened in the NBA, right? No team
correct,
has ever
129-0. I wonder how many times someone even forced a game 7, but it's 129-0. No one's ever come back from 3-0 in the NBA.
Well, Vegas must really need Philadelphia then.
Let's see who shows up at the Garden tomorrow wearing striped jerseys. Then we'll get our answer.
All right. Meanwhile, all the trash talk last night, the nonsense. We'll get to that after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like anti-competitive. Stupid. They're so stupid. 98.5 Sports
Hub. What do you expect the environment to be like when you guys get back home?
We pit bulls. It's a dog fight. And we're going straight for the neck.
We're pit bulls. It's a dog fight. We're going straight for the neck. The NBA tough guy stuff is something is another thing I find amusing. I've come to enjoy it. It used to make me, you know, wretch, but now it's cute. Just like the fixing of games, which is sort of standard operating procedure in the league. The tough guy stuff is, well, like, you know, so there was almost a big fight because Terry Rozier wouldn't hand the ball over to Joel Embiid. It's like it's literally like schoolyard stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no. There's a whistle. Give me the ball. Give me the ball. I'm not going to give you the ball. I'm not giving you the ball. Give me the ball. No, I'm not giving you the ball. Give me the ball. And the next thing you know, it's like, you know, all the tough guy stuff. I'm a pit bull. I'm going straight for your neck. Like, all of a sudden, we're going to have like a gangland war over the fact that he wouldn't hand over the ball when the ref blew the whistle. Like, it's just so silly. And no one's going to touch anyone. Like, because you know that. You know, and, you know, at least in hockey, I guarantee you, Marchand's going to have to fight someone next year. He's going to have to fight someone for tonguing people. And, like, that got sort of nonsensical, too. But there's always usually a reckoning in hockey. In basketball, it's just hot air, trash talk, like, nonsense.
No, for a brief instant, I thought that thing actually had a chance to become a fight last night.
No chance.
When Rozier reached out and shoved him, I thought, ooh, Like, could there be a punch coming? And honestly, I thought the Celtics got off easy on that one.
Me too.
And most times, nothing's going to happen because it is the NBA. You're right about that. But with Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart, could happen.
So how'd you feel about the Marcus Morris 3-0 thing?
I actually thought that was kind of funny.
It was funny.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. That was excellent.
I mean, you know, when Embiid's there flapping his gums, they're like fighting to stay alive, like, in the series.
3-0, dude.
Yeah, like, get out of my face. You're down 3-0. If it gets a 3-2, we'll talk. Like, really. I did. I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, I give Morris credit for that. But the whole thing is, again, the game just felt...
predetermined.
Engineered.
Yeah. Massaged.
Managed.
Manipulated.
Manipulated.
My father's 82 years old. I said to him, what did you think of the Celtics game last night? He said, it's fixed. It is. Everybody knows,
like,
it.
I mean, I don't take it lightly to say, would you think that game was fixed last night? And I honestly, I'm not being a wise guy. I'm like, yeah, it kind of was. It's you knew it was coming, and it's accepted. It's part of, it's like standard operating procedure in that league. Especially with sort of the conditions. Again, remember, there's some big picture business ramifications there. People lost a lot of money last year because you had too many short series. The caps were lower than expected. You couldn't. What did you have to do? You had to do something.
Bradley. Avery Bradley. They had to get rid of Avery Bradley.
You had to trade Bradley for Morris.
It cost you Avery Bradley because the caps weren't as high as expected. And they weren't as high as expected because they lost playoff games because there were too many short series.
It was 79 games last year in the postseason, which tied for the fewest in the last 15 years. And there was also a drop in TV ratings and revenue that the NBA had to ultimately pay the networks back.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember how bad the postseason was last year?
Yeah.
It was a bad postseason. It was wretched. It really was.
I wonder how many games were on pace for this year. I mean, the second round, you were on the verge of having 2-5-game and 2-4-game series in the second round. That's going to leave a mark. So, what do? Here comes Tony Brothers and Scott Foster. It's like, of course. It's just, I love it.
And a game 7 on Sunday on Mother's Day between Boston and Philadelphia.
It is. It's a bad sign when the referees show up in trench coats carrying guitar cases.
Nate in Florida. Go ahead, Nate.
Oh, my God. The moment I saw the starting lineups and they showed the officiating, I was like, we're screwed. There's no chance that we have to win this game. I'm not sure if you guys paid attention to the first round. The Pelicans, they swept the Trailblazers, and the Warriors were on the verge of sweeping the Spurs, but look who comes down. It's like WWE when interference comes down the ring. They had Tony Brothers officiate that game. He gave David West a technical foul from the bicycle. He wasn't on the bench. He wasn't on the court. Tony Brothers gave David West a technical foul from the bicycle.
So I love
it. I'm like, we're screwed. Against Cleveland, we have no shot.
Good job, Nate. Well, now, see, I don't know about that. I mean, if someone's up 3-0, it's going to be a short series, maybe. Well, look, I mean, hold on. We'll get to the fixing against LeBron thing when it happens. I mean, LeBron hasn't needed to fix Jack against you in a long time. So let's see if that's even needed.
The opening series with LeBron and the Pacers went 7 games. LeBron hasn't been past 4-0 since, like, 2011.
Okay, but let's get to the fix, you know, making sure LeBron gets to the finals. That's sort of a different story, making sure LeBron gets to the finals, than what we're dealing with here, which is, I think, they just need inventory. They've lost too many games, and they got to extend some series.
Well, and last year, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I know the Eastern Conference Final was a complete smoke show. Wasn't it the same in the West?
I don't even remember.
I mean, I think Golden State wiped them out. I'll check it because I want to say they lost like one game when they got to the finals or something like that. They were on some ridiculous pace where everyone knew it was coming. So at least this year, I feel like the Conference Finals should be competitive. So Cleveland,
well, they definitely should be.
So Cleveland is not what it was. We know that. And so I feel like you should get a 6-game series there. And Houston will put up a fight. They're going to lose, but they'll put up a fight against Golden State.
Pete in Delaware, what do you got?
Hey, guys. Hey, we were one win away from becoming the first NBA team to sweep the series as the underdog. So they couldn't let that happen. So, but hey, you know, Toronto, as we all know, puked all over itself. So someone had to pay the price for that. But in all seriousness, I do hope going forward that they don't start calling these games like game 5 really tight, because, you know, our defense is a big part of why we win some of these games. And I hate to see us get, you know, all of a sudden we got to get to game 7 because we're getting the calls, the officiating is going to get a lot tighter.
So let's say, I mean, again, the thing you said, they can't let the Celtics sweep as an underdog. I don't think they care about that. I think they care about the number of playoff games.
Getting their money.
Like Jimmy just gave you last year. And if you have too few playoff games, you have to kick back money to the networks. And so that means there's less money in your pocket. That means there's less money on the cap. It fouls everything up. It fouled everything up last year.
So the, when Jimmy said 12-0, went over the air?
No, I didn't hear this.
Oh, all right. Golden State 12-0 last year in the first three rounds. Cleveland was 12-1. The conference finals were 4-0 and 4-1.
Wow.
I mean, they were wipeouts, and then the finals were 4-1. Golden State went 16-1 in the playoffs last year. It was a complete runaway train, and Cleveland was blowing people out on the way there. It was a complete disaster the postseason last year.
If my math is correct, they are at 63 playoff games right now. 63. They had 79 last year.
So that feels like they're on pace for to do better.
Yes, the first round was a little closer. I actually went and counted all the games in the first round about a week ago because there was some similar talk about last year being such a disaster, and the first round wasn't that far off. But as you got deeper, I mean, the conference finals and the finals in the NBA should be guaranteed six-game series.
Right.
They really should. And last year they were 4-5-5. I mean, it was a debacle.
Let's go to an expert in the gambling community. This is Dan in Brighton, we'll call him. Yes, Dan, go ahead.
Well, I know you guys were talking about the whole Donahue thing. I just kind of wanted to input a little bit more onto this. So I don't know if you guys know this, but when Donahue got out, he actually started a gambling service where he basically, you know, sold his NBA picks. It was called refpicks.com. And in almost every single game, I think it was something absurd, like 72 to 75% of the games, almost all of his picks had Scott Foster refereeing the game. So, I mean, I know that that's not well known, but it just goes to lend the credence that, you know, the league, it's absolutely fixed, and it's hilarious, and people just wildly accept it.
Okay, call us on a landline next time, Dan.
I just called. I just think it's funny that the website is refpicks.com. That is brilliant.
There's nothing else like it.
I just called it up. Transform into a winner, it says. But home about Tim Donaghy.
Three quarters of his games are this Foster guy. Again, I'll read you the phone records. It is borderline criminal that this guy is still a ref, given his relationship with Tim Donaghy right in the middle of the time that Donaghy was betting and fixing games. It's mind-blowing. This guy's still in the league, and he still gets assigned to big playoff games. And it's like, boy, that's awesome. So the ref fixer now is a website, and he only touts the games which his former buddy refs. That is so rich.
Refpicks.com. Yeah, you can email him or call him. 800-LINE. Get NBA picks, MLB picks, NFL picks, and college football picks from Tim Donaghy and experts here at Ref Picks. That is unbelievable. How is that allowed? How is that even allowed? That's unbelievable. We're focused on bringing only the best handicappers in the nation to one spot because we have guys on the inside and we can fix it. That is unreal.
We'll continue with your Celtics sauce mix and some Red Sox Yankees coming up next as well in our long commercial-free segment.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now here's the 2-1. And it hit him. Austin slammed his bat on the ground. Now heads toward the mound.
I don't blame him.
And he's ready to swing. He and Kelly go down on the ground. Both benches empty. We have a brawl in Boston. And the brawl is going on. Austin had slid hard into Holt. And so Kelly hit him with a pitch, and Austin charged the mound.
Look, there's payback and there's payback. You don't hit a batter there throwing 98 miles an hour. You just don't do that. That's his life. Never mind his career. That's his life. Are you kidding me?
I was ready to defend myself. Someone comes to my property and in my backyard. I have two dogs and ready to come to my property. And, you know, if I'm getting attacked, then I'm going to have to defend myself.
They put Marcus Smart's pit bulls with Joe Kelly's guard dogs.
A lot of dog talk here.
Yeah, like, don't come into my property. Don't come onto my property.
We pit bulls. It's a dog fight. We're going straight for the neck.
Oh, tough guy dog talk. Keep your dogs away from me. You're stupid dogs.
Someone comes to my property and in my backyard, I have two dogs and ready to come to my property. And, you know, if I'm getting attacked, then I'm going to have to defend myself.
Yeah, your dogs suck. Let me just guarantee you, Marcus and Joe Kelly, let me just guarantee you one thing. Your dogs suck. Your tough dogs. God, I can't stand that dog stuff. But anyway, here we are, Maz, the rematch, Red Sox-Yankees. What do you
think? Yes, absolutely. Look, it's in some ways, again, to call a three-game series in early May important sounds foolish, but I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that.
Why is it important?
Because I think the head-to-head games between these teams this year could be pivotal. If you take out the one head-to-head series that they played, the three games in Boston, they have the same record. They have the same record. So I think that effectively what's going to happen is that they're both going to beat up on the majority of the league. Now, Houston's good. Cleveland's pretty good. Although the Yankees just beat the snot out of them and won three straight over the weekend against the Indians. And so we want to say, well, what about the Angels? Both teams went out there, played the Angels and mauled them. They destroyed them. The Yankees did to the Angels exactly what the Red Sox did. So you eliminate that head-to-head series. They're both 23-8. I want to say it is, but whatever it is, it's identical. And so I look at it and say, well, this is, you know, these games could decide the division.
And the division is important again.
Huge. It's huge.
Not like the old days where it didn't matter. You both went into the first round for five-game series. Now the wild card plays that one-game play-in, and who the hell knows with that?
Right, because, you know, even the home field part of it doesn't really matter when you get to the postseason. None of it. But the idea of having to play that one-game play-in, huge deterrent. I mean, that's just, you know, what if you get into that one-game play-in and you got to go against Ohtani?
Oh, I love that thing.
Or you know, who knows? I just throw him out as an example. I don't know who's going to get in there. But what if you go against a team that has one great pitcher and he shuts you down, you lose 2-1?
I love the one-game play-in for so many levels. It makes, you know, it makes the regular season more meaningful for, you know, if you're one of these teams that's wild card or division. That's a huge difference.
Well, and this year especially, right? This is a lot like it was back in the, you know, early 2000s with the Red Sox and the Yankees, well, where they were clearly two of the best teams in the league.
But this is why I'm saying there, if you finish in the wild card, you're still playing a five-game series like you are. There was really no practical difference.
Right. I'm just saying that they're both good to the point where you know they're going to be in the playoffs, but now you have that element.
So much better.
Oh, way better. Way better because you can't lay off. The Red Sox used to just play for the wild card then.
Right.
They totally did. They would never, I don't know if they ever fully admitted it publicly, but they just looked at it and said, there's no deterrent there. We're in. Who cares? You got to play in the division series either way. We'll get our pitching set up and we'll trust our team. And so now you want nothing to do with that one game play-in. I'm eager to see what the lineup looks like tonight.
I was going to say, what other issues sort of stand out to you, Red Sox?
Okay, so Jimmy, if and when that lineup comes out, let me know. Because if you start reading the tea leaves a little bit, it sounds like they're getting a little tired of Jackie Bradley Jr. And I can't blame them. Bradley is has the worst OPS in the among center fielders, qualifying center fielders in the American League, and among 87 qualifying players, he's 84th in OPS.
Hey.
He's one of the
at all positions.
Right. Right, at all positions.
He's 5 of his last 47 in his last 15 games with no extra base hits. He has struck out 21 times in that stretch. Holy moly.
He's batting 178 for the season with an OPS of 535.
What's Nunez, too? Because he's been trash.
Yeah, Nunez
is 9 of his last 54 batting. That's 167 since April 21st with only 3 RBI.
Right, and he's batting 229 overall.
So what do you do there?
Is Holt ready to come back?
Close. I saw that. I don't know when he's actually eligible, but he's close. And so, you know, there's an easy move to make there in terms of getting him in the lineup. And Severino's pitching tonight for the Yankees, who's tough on righties. So you want as many lefties in there as possible. But I want to see I want to see what they do with Bradley.
So the Bradley's more, to me, the more interesting one, because a real push to keep him in the offseason. I feel like they could have dealt him, but they didn't. I think they value his defense, overvalue his defense. Remember the whole thing in the offseason where there's this groundswell where a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr. is supposed to be more valuable than a guy like Bobby Abreu with the White Sox? Remember that?
Sure.
Bobby Abreu's 3,100 every single year, and Jackie Bradley's a career 248 hitter, whatever it is.
Jose Abreu, you mean.
Jose Abreu, right? And so there was this you know, debate in the, of course, the nerd community that has Jackie Bradley being a more valuable player than Jose Abreu with the White Sox. So remember all this? And now here's Bradley can't hit his way out of a paper bag again. Meanwhile, Moreland is ripping it up. I had his numbers here in front of me. But anyway, Moreland's hitting really well.
347 for the year.
Moreland's hitting 347 with 1,060 OPS and
correct.
17 RBIs.
He's been good.
Over 1,000 OPS. So the thing there is J.D. Martinez, probably in Yankee Stadium, is in right field, not left.
Mookie plays center.
Okay, and you DH Hanley and put Moreland at first.
Right, that's the easy fix. Yep, that's the easy fix, and that's the way they're going to. There was a comment by Alex Cora over the weekend where he said something to the effect of, he's putting pressure on the manager to play more, talking about Moreland. And if that happens, Bradley's out. And to me, they should do this anyway. Like, the way I look at it is, why the hell should Bradley be in the lineup at all? Because to me, he's been garbage pretty much all year, really. And so I don't know why they're going out of their way to keep Jackie Bradley in the lineup.
So pretty precarious here from a pitching standpoint. On that front, David Price has gotten his teeth kicked in pretty much for the last handful of starts. It's Pomerantz tonight, who's not gotten off to a good start.
Correct. The last four innings of the last start were pretty good, but overall he has not been good.
And then Porcello, who's been good. But if you just lay out, you know, the favorite pitcher, you're probably looking at losing two or three in this.
Feels that way. Yeah, feels that way.
I mean, if you go by the starting pitching matchups.
Yeah, the Yankees are lining up their best guys, basically, and you're not, right? You miss Sale in this series. So I would give it, plus, you know, there is something to be said for the home thing in the regular season, the comfort of home and building your team to the ballpark and all of that. And so, you know, to me, if the Red Sox get two out of three in New York, it's a good statement.
Is there any payback coming here from the Tyler Austin stuff?
I don't rule it out. I don't. I mean, to me, if I'm the Yankees and I'm going to do it, I'm doing it now. I'm doing it early in the year. I'm not going to wait until late in the year when the games are really, really important. And all of a sudden you run the risk of suspensions and, you know, guys missing time and who knows what. No way. If you're going to do it now. Get it over with.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.